This is the problem. Take a pair of scales of your...
Last time, I talked about how sometimes in big seas, you can get foam floating on the surface and snarled on the beach. This foam is made from billions of bubbles, and sometimes it can be meters thick. I also described how this foam happens when bubbles, which are usually quite unstable, are made stable by slowing down the rate at which liquid drains out of the thin wall of the bubble. You can do this by reducing the surface tension, or making the liquid more viscous, or by adding particles to it. Reducing surface tension is what detergents do, and so natural detergents will help make a foam much more stable. Hydrophilic, that is, fat-hating particles, can slow down enormously the rate at which water drains out of the bubble wall. On average, seafoam happens because of natural detergent-like chemicals that sit in the surface microlayer. These chemicals typically come from phytoplankton blooms, from seaweed, and even from terrestrial plants. The waves, especially in big seas, can whisk these chemicals into a foamy mass. Now, of course, foams in different parts of the world will have different chemical makeups. So foam near kelp beds might show that proteins make up 20% of the dried weight, followed by fats at 6% and carbohydrates at 2%. But looking at seafoam in another way, that is, in terms of living creatures, one worker found that seafoam was made up of about 25% solid matter, mostly bacteria and diatoms, but there were also significant numbers of dinoflagellates and both green algae and blue-green algae. And in this study, the majority of creatures found in the seafoam were not floating freely like plankton, but instead were mostly attached to either sediments or plants. But of course, these proportions will depend enormously on what's around in the local environment. Now, seafoams are not inherently bad or good for the environment. Again, it all depends on local effects. So on one hand, aquatic foams can be both a food supply and a place to live for various organisms. They can concentrate carbon and other nutrients, and in fact can be a site for nutrient recycling. Fish and waterfowl often feed on foam. And foam in fresh water can also increase fertilization success and retention of eggs and larvae in fish that build nests and in tropical aquatic frogs. But on the other hand, the foam can be so thick that young children can miss their footing while walking through it, and can even drown. The foam can also sometimes concentrate metals, such as zinc, copper and lead, as well as hydrocarbons, pesticides and natural toxins. And it can then carry these toxins into living creatures via the food chain. In one case, an especially protein-rich foam that came from a red tide bloom washed over marine birds. Now, the foam was not toxic, but it was similar to soap in that it removed the normal water repellents from the birds' feathers. And as a result, the foam made it harder for the birds to fly, and many of them died of hypothermia. And in another case, a bloom of dinoflagellates in the eastern Pacific produced a mucus-rich foam that actually suffocated some corals. And foam can also potentially infect humans. Yes, bubbles in the ocean can pick up and carry viruses. And when these bubbles that make up foam break and then pop open, they squirt the viruses into the air on tiny jets of seawater. These jets are now aerosols, and they can be spread by the wind, putting humans at risk of exposure to viruses and to other pathogens, and in some cases, to toxins. Now, one study deliberately injected viruses into the surf and found that the concentration of viruses in the aerosol droplets was 200 times higher than in the water in the surf. As you would expect, the virus level decreased the further you went downwind from the surf. But in its natural form, seafoam at the shore ain't that bad. After all, as they say, worse things happen at sea.
What does it mean? Why is it so?